2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
There's desperation and anguish.
More than 80,000 Afghans have since arrived in America, but this story is still unfolding. I'm Andreas Martin. In my new podcast, Stranger Becomes Neighbor, we'll find out what happens to these new arrivals in our communities. Who would help our newest neighbors? Follow us at kslpodcast.com, Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.
Hello, and welcome to the Loudmouth Project's Voices of Reason. I am Jason Lee, along with Amy Donaldson. Today, we are going to be joined by military veterans Arlo Doyle and Frank DeVito, who's on the phone, to discuss the nation's withdrawal from Afghanistan after 20 years in the war on terror. And, you know, when this first happened, this is 2021 now, obviously 2001, just after 9/11, the Bush administration, they made this huge pitch as to why to go. And at the time, they were going into Iraq. But then, as time went on, we kept expanding our
Well, they went into Afghanistan to look for Osama bin Laden, and that was the real war on terror. The Iraq invasion was, they have weapons of mass destruction. That came a little later. But
that
which
was a lie.
Yeah.
So
to be clear, Afghanistan actually came first, and it was the war on terror, and it was, let's go get Osama bin Laden and break up Al-Qaeda, the people. And basically, the pitch was, we have to, hit back for 9/11. We have to go after the people who attacked us. And we've learned some things since then.
like the fact that most of those people were from Saudi Arabia?
Yeah.
We started the operations in Afghanistan by November. We started the operations immediately, but we were boots on ground, I think, by November of the same year, 2001. And we were going in there to, we knew that Taliban
So Frank, was there a Taliban back in the early part of, or was it Al-Qaeda?
Yes. So Taliban definitely, was there. They had taken power in like the 90s. They were a pretty atrocious governing force, and we never recognized them officially as a government in Afghanistan.
Now, something that is kind of important to point out. So I believe it was right around 94, 95 when the Taliban technically took control of Afghanistan, but they really only controlled the southern part of the country. Their seat of power was in Kandahar, which is one of the largest cities in Afghanistan. And then primarily the northern parts of the country and Kabul were controlled by forces that we armed, better known as the Northern Alliance. And they kind of just controlled their little tribal areas. There were certain warlords who controlled areas.
But what was the Soviet invasion was in the 70s, right?
Right.
And so, and that was like a 20-year war.
Yeah, and they basically had, like, we could have learned some lessons from the Russians.
Also, you could look at Vietnam and France.
Yeah.
And same thing. So I think it's important to have kind of just that little history in your mind. But the Taliban has been a force, like you say, since the 90s. Mostly, my understanding is in villages, but they gained a lot of power because there was a power vacuum in a lot of places. So we go into this, into Afghanistan, with what we say is a narrow purpose and mission. And then it just keeps getting bigger. And I asked these two guys, how many tours did you do in Afghanistan?
I was there twice.
Twice, and you were in Iraq twice.
Once. Right?
Or once, okay.
So, Arlo, give us a little bit of background on your military service.
So I joined the Army in April of 2001. On September 11th, I was at Fort Belvoir, Virginia, which is not that far from where the Pentagon is and all of that stuff. It's all part of the military district of Washington. My first tour in Afghanistan, I was with a PSYOPs unit. So we did a lot of
How quickly were you in Afghanistan? Like, what was the year? Do you remember?
I was, so it was mid-2002 was okay. The first time I went there.
So pretty soon after, yeah.
Yeah. And then, my first tour there, I was with a PSYOPs unit. So we spent a lot of time going out doing village assessments and trying to find out what the people needed, doing that good old winning the hearts and minds,
yeah.
Which was not very successful, unfortunately.
And then, Frank, what's your background?
So I was also Army and worked with intelligence. I was a human intelligence collector.
What does that mean, Frank?
So we collect information about what's going on from human sources. So, you know, we talk to people directly.
Okay.
So that's interviewing people, interviews, interrogations, source operations, meaning just, you know, developing relationships with individuals and parties and people to be able to, you know, gather a picture of what's happening in the working space.
Well, so you're one of the people who is dependent on native Afghans to help you, right? Interpreters, driver, transportation.
Yeah, totally. Absolutely. You know, we study language in intelligence. You know, it requires that you have a language and so we study that and learn, you know, Pashto or Farsi or whatever is, needed there. But we still use the interpreters. They're heavily relied on, yeah.
So what – let me just get quickly. We probably want to go into the second segment with
No, we got 2 minutes.
Two minutes. Okay. So why don't you first, Frank, give us your reaction to what happened this week?
I'm sad. I was sad. And I still am. I carry a mourning. It's been a very long fight and a lot of hope has been built in my heart at different times and different points in time for different reasons. I've had some conversations with individuals that are from there that really are such good people. And I developed a lot of love and respect for them and where they were coming from. And some of the things that they saw their countrymen, you know, these Taliban, do to their country is so heartbreaking. I mean, I've been in tears in the middle of this war zone, in tears with men, you know, hardened men, war fighting men, who are from there, who are just brokenhearted. And my heart breaks with them right now. And I'm brokenhearted because I feel like, we have so many of our own lessons to be able to learn from. We have the lessons of other nations to learn from. And it feels like we're over here, you know, screwing up the end game again.
Yeah,
Arlo, I want to give yourself about a minute. So, what were your feelings when you found out about this?
I would say defeated and sort of deflated. So, like when things went to crap in Iraq, I really didn't care one way or another. Even though Iraq was the area where I got injured. Afghanistan for me is sort of it is where I lost my innocence and my innocent view on the world. And knowing just how much Afghanistan changed me as an individual and knowing what I was like before I went to Afghanistan and then seeing, you know, basically it's right back where it was in 2001. And we have spilled countless blood and treasure over there. And we have absolutely nothing to show for it. And so that is probably the hardest part for me.
When we come back, we'll continue our discussion. I want to get a sense from you gentlemen. What do you think happens, you know, now that this transition is going on? What does the future look like for the people in Afghanistan? We're speaking today with Arlo Doyle and Frank DeVito, who are both Army veterans and who have served time in the Middle East and trying to get their perspective on our nation's withdrawal from Afghanistan after 20 years involving the war on terror. You're listening to Voices of Reason.
2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
There's desperation and anguish.
More than 80,000 Afghans have since arrived in America, but this story is still unfolding. I'm Andrea Martin. In my new podcast, Stranger Becomes Neighbor, we'll find out what happens to these new arrivals in our communities. Who would help our newest neighbors? Follow us at KSLPodcast.com, Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.
We are back with Voices of Reason, Amy Donaldson, Jason Lee, today joined by Arlo Doyle and Fred DeVito, who are both Army veterans who serve time in the Middle East and have perspective that obviously first-person perspective on what's going on. As America now, it draws down its troops from Afghanistan after 20 years. And
one thing I wanted to point out, though, at the end of the last segment, Arlo said that, you know, we don't really have anything to show for what we sacrificed. And to some degree, I'm 100% agree with that. But there's I read an article about those who have been raised under basically U.S. rule. So even though we have had this, an Afghani government, it's really been U.S. rule there for 20 years. And there are Afghanis who don't know any other country. The country they know is a Western version of their country. And that looks to be a pretty rapid death. And so I wondered first, just to start, your thoughts, Arlo, and then Frank, what happens to people like that? And or is there hope that they can move their country into a different direction?
Well, I would certainly hope that those who have, you know, basically been living in, you know, what we made a free country, and they have had a taste of what freedom is like. So I think now we just look and that we hope that those younger folks, you know, they fight for what they want. I mean, us being there as Americans, we're viewed as an occupying force. But if the people of Afghanistan decide that, you know, we don't want this anymore, we want this thing. It can be contagious, but it's got to come from them. Mm-hmm. I mean, there is really no way for any kind of outside entity to come in and say, this is how you're going to live and this is what freedom is like and you're going to like it.
Yeah, and if you put yourself in their situation, you wouldn't want that either. I would probably fight that, even if it was good for me.
Yeah.
Right? So, Frank, did you have some thoughts?
Real quick. So, Arlo, before we started this, we had a little talk about that, and we're going to come back, and he's going to explain kind of what that resentment and resistance to accepting kind of our doctrine is, how it's different from what they would do. But, sure. Frank, your thoughts.
Well, so the Afghan people are really resilient people, and they're a really lovely people. There's a variety of folks there, right? I mean, you know, you have different tribes, and you got a lot of history, and you know, there's a variety of, you know, race and culture that develops under the Afghan umbrella, the national umbrella. But so I do have hope. I mean, I have hope for them. I think that they, you know, there's a hope that they will, you know, fight. But it's been a very, we're at the minimum threshold, 20 years of presence and assistance in developing. And we haven't really been occupying in like the traditional sense of the term, right? Like, we have not been influencing them the way that, you know, a traditional occupying force would. We haven't been in there like enforcing our culture and our rules on them. We've only been there.
But don't you think we've been bribing them with money and toys? I feel like a really bad parent. What do you think of the equipment that we left there? Do you think that's going to be problematic?
Well, that's another question, right? In answering, you know, this first question, I think hope, and there's reason to hope, but I also think that, again, we're at this minimum threshold of presence, and the training and the time they need to really have like adopted the strength that they have available to them, mm-hmm. and the force of arms that they have available to them, you know, we're really at the minimum threshold of that, and the Taliban knows that, and so do the other warlords. I mean, you know, the country is a country that fell to warlords after the Soviet invasion, and so, you know, when we think of this, you know, it's not so linear as a one-to-one or a one-to-one with a one backing. Remember, the entire world was with us. All of NATO was in that country. Okay, it wasn't like we were there alone. You know, this entire world went in there to do this and assist in this. And mm-hmm. so that's another, you know, that's a heartbreaking thing on top of it. But, you know, and then this other question that you have is another question entirely, right? Like, how did you phrase that? Would you repeat it for me?
Yeah, what do we do with all that equipment that we left there? Tanks and helicopters and planes, which were, yeah, you know, some people assert were built to just make money for defense contractors.
Well, I mean, they were built to fight war, mm-hmm. and they made money for defense contractors, but that's not their entire purpose unless you were the defense contractor. But even if you're selling these things, that you're mm-hmm. selling them so that you have effective tools for war for your war fighters. This is war, you know, and we want the best stuff we can get, and we try to get it there. Iraq got everything really fast, including the personnel that they needed. I mean, you know, Iraq got so much attention. I felt like it withdrew from Afghanistan. And a number of times, Afghanistan's been marginalized, and the importance of it has been marginalized so many times that we don't even know what we're talking about. You know, mm-hmm. people don't even know, you know, here we are 20 years of experience, and we're still asking questions that are like basic and fundamental to what was going on there in the first place. But So, I mean, the equipment is there and mm-hmm. it should be there, but now it's in the wrong hands because we've handled this thing incorrectly in the end. And it wasn't that we handled it because of a lack of knowing what we ought to have done. We handled it this way out of a pressure that was present politically mm-hmm. from our people here who are so ill-informed in the first place,
yeah.
which is a whole other complex issue that we've run into, right? Like, you know, the last 10, 15 years of American politics has been such a horror show.
Mm-hmm. I would say it goes beyond that, but Arlo, do you have some thoughts on that, like that political element of it? Does it obviously makes it more complicated. And
so, I mean, the political element of it, politics shouldn't be involved here, honestly mm-hmm. speaking. When it comes to how
can it not be?
Well,
yeah.
It's the way our politics is slung around.
Yeah.
I mean, there are people who are well-informed, present great rational, logical arguments, but that's not how people change their views. People are very motivated by emotion. And so yeah. when you have the political leaders that are out there saying, oh, we need to do this for patriotism, or we need to do this for the humanitarian aspect of it, you know, they're almost just beating their own chest to make themselves look good. And they rarely follow through mm-hmm. on what they actually say. So, I mean, here we are, five presidents later, 20 years, and, you know, we have been the country as a whole has been fed this promise of when we leave Afghanistan, everything's going to be fine. And then 11 days later, it goes.
Right.
And so, you know, the politics of it is, you know, we should have had a clear, like, dictated, this is what we're going to do. I mean, I understand that plans change, but a lot of the rationale and stuff behind, you know, what we've done or what we're trying to do is emotionally charged and oftentimes not very well thought out.
So when we come back, Amy's raising her hand, so we want to keep going with our discussion. But I also want to get to, you know, did we go in there with the right ideas? Because I think we thought some things that didn't kind of come to fruition. And how might we have done it better so that we might have had a more favorable outcome for not just for us, but for the people of Afghanistan as well. Speaking today with Frank DeVito and Arlo Doyle, two Army veterans, talking about the withdrawal from the Middle East after 20 years of the war on terror. Amy Donaldson, Jason Lee, this is Voices of Reason. Jason Lee, Amy Donaldson, Voices of Reason. We're back with Arlo Doyle and Frank DeVito, speaking. They're military veterans from the Army, and both of whom have served time in Afghanistan and Iraq and the other places in the Middle East and apparently Southeast Asia, because I don't know my geography. And Frank, explain to me where I've heard this for 20 years. You know, we call all of that area the Middle East, and basically, I am an ugly American. I admit that.
We,
right now,
as in the media,
I understand,
and we're
the
wrong.
Media, but we're, and we're wrong. Explain to our listeners that
the distinction
between where Afghanistan is and kind of where the other places are.
Yeah, so Southwest Asia is where Afghanistan is, and you know, to call it the Middle East, it's a you know, that's a common thing. You know, you're not entirely wrong to say it, because it's a commonly used, you know, statement. But technically, it's Southwest Asia, and you know, and it sits between, you know, Iran, Pakistan, China, and south of like Kyrgyzstan and you know, those areas there.
You know, what's interesting, to be honest with you, I never really understood what the Middle East was, because, like, that's not, like, I know it's a region, but it's not really, because it doesn't give you a sense of that it's in Asia. Again, right. We all think Asians are Korean, Chinese, Thai, Japanese, but Asia's, it's a large country, and if you want to know the truth about it, there's China and, well, China, not is Asia, but Russia. Part of Russia is in Asia. And most people, it's, well, I guess they call it Eurasia, is how that works. So I as an American, I need to work better on my geopolitics and my geography in general.
Well, so. I was interested in the conversation you and Arlo had about sort of the hearts and minds, because that was part of the deal.
Right.
Yeah.
So
well,
what I suggested that if an occupying force came to America, we as Americans would stand up against it.
We wouldn't care what it was coming
for.
Yeah.
But Arlo gave me some perspective on the major difference in how this is viewed in Afghanistan, for instance.
So the big sort of cultural difference between us as Americans and the Afghanis is so
Afghan.
Afghan. Sorry, but
Afghanis, they're
but they are a very tribal centric culture. So. It boils down to they are very, very concerned about their immediate family, mm-hmm. and then their concern is about their village, mm-hmm. and then their concern is about their tribe overall. When it comes to sort of a national identity, they've never really had that. Whereas here in America, you know, it's we identify as Americans. You know, we don't break it up. There's no – we don't have
– That's more important than your identity as a Utah. Yeah.
Correct. So we don't really have that sense of a tribal culture, and going over there and being like, hey, look, we're going to offer you guys all this freedom. We're going to help you build this nation. That wasn't really building a nation is not like a concern for the everyday Afghani. They're more concerned about just trying to make it day by day and not, you know, have their village wiped out or not starve to death. Or anything like that. Whereas us, we're like, oh, hey, I want to go travel. Let's go do this. I'm from America. And it doesn't
care about the national education policy and, you know, yeah.
Right. And so our perception of what should be important versus their perception of what is important to them are far off from each other.
So knowing that, let's go back to Jason's question, and Frank, you can field this one. Did we go in there with the right purpose? I mean, I know we went in there after to break up Al-Qaeda and to go after Osama bin Laden, which, yeah, obviously everyone's going to say that's the right purpose. But did we have the right...
Well, considering the fact he was in Pakistan, I don't know that it was.
But I mean, what do you think we had the right...
Yeah.
Like mindset and tools, and did you feel that way as a soldier? Like, hey...
Well, we had a responsive mindset going in, right? We had been attacked, so we were going back in to, you know, wreck it, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
Which is an appropriate war-fighting mindset. They declared war, we declared war, it's done. Now we're in war.
Mm-hmm.
And so the appropriate mindset is to go in there and fight a war and destroy, right?
Yeah.
So we went there and we eliminated and began to eliminate our enemy. But we did this. Let me say something very important here. We did this in such an advanced way. When I say advanced, I don't just mean technologically. I mean like on an ethical level. We had so much advancement in the approach we took going into Afghanistan. It was very careful in a lot of ways. And when I say that, oh, yeah, there's always room to learn, right? We are definitely have things that we need to improve from this, but you know, almost in some ways we were too careful and too considerate, because I mean, you know, these guys have been fighting hard in a hard war, in a hard way, in a way that has a disregard for life and certain ethical boundaries that we have ourselves tied to as Americans, and really, I mean, around the globe, NATO. You know, there's so many of us that went in there with a certain ethical mindset that, I mean, it's unprecedented, really. It's so amazing what we did. But it also tied our hands in a lot of ways. So, yes, did we go in there with the right intention? Sure, it was a good intention. It was a right intention. So we went in there to kick some ass. And that, mm-hmm. what other intention is there but that when you're going in to go kick some ass?
Yeah.
But we also went in there with a lot of consideration for culture and not going in there to be an occupying force and not going in there to be a conquering force, right? We're not going in there to conquer anybody. We're going in there to destroy and dismantle an element that is a threat to us. And rather than destroying the entire country,
yeah.
saying screw you all, we're saying, hey, but Afghanistan was very complex because Afghanistan had come out of a destruction from the Soviet invasion
yeah.
and that period, and also out of a lot of climate, a lot of political climate change, where they had gone through, you know, the communist approach, where they tried to come in through the colleges, they tried to come in through, you know, the universities and develop a communist relationship that way, and then they went into you know, warfare, and you know, they were trying to conquer in that old traditional sense, and they had come away from that. The Afghans had come away from that war with a new political party rising, who is this Taliban Islamic rule, who is a Pashtun-based rule. So, you know, Pashtuns have, like Arlo was saying, a Pashtun tribe is like the largest, it's the predominant tribe in the mm-hmm. country. And, you know, Pashtun Wali, they have their own laws and their own rules about things. And they adopt Islam, but they remain true to their tribal culture, which is, you know, to honor mm-hmm. certain things. There's a lot to that.
Yeah, let me jump in and I just want to know from Arlo, like, do you think we had the right mindset? I mean,
so,
did you agree with some of that, what Frank said?
So our original mission to go in there and dismantle the terrorist forces and to get Osama bin Laden, who ultimately coordinated an attack on American soil, that original mission, yes, that was a noble mission. We completely and totally should have done that. However, we got bogged down in a quagmire of, you know, trying to change a cultural mindset to be more in line with our own mindset. And that is probably where the failure started.
Yeah.
Can I make a disagreement with that, Arlo?
Yeah, go for it.
So I just disagree in that we were trying to change them. We didn't. And that was a part of a problem for us, is that we didn't effectively offer any of our culture other than to inform them where we're coming from. But more than anything, we really tried to adopt and understand their culture and approach them from something they would understand.
So
and that was another
I'm going to totally disagree
okay,
with
but
you.
Okay, hold on. We're going to disagree in the next segment.
Okay. Jason's taking us to break. Yeah.
When we come back, we will continue this part of the discussion. I love that we get so much out of this.
We're learning something, right? And I really appreciate both of you for doing this.
Absolutely. Arlo Doyle and Frank DeVito, thank you very much for joining us. We're going to keep going right after this. You're listening to Voices of Reason. Jason Lee, Amy Donaldson, Voices of Reason. We are back with Arlo Doyle and Frank DeVito, two military veterans with experience in Afghanistan, talking about our withdrawal, the nation's withdrawal, and the drawdown after 20 years of the war on terror. Okay, so Frank was bringing up some points, and Amy had some objections.
This is why I love Frank. He is an idealist. I consider myself to be a pretty optimistic idealist, too. But I would say... And Arlo was bringing up the point that we got bogged down in trying to change people who are culturally different from us. And Frank took issue with that. And I would say this, I don't know that everyone tried to change people culturally, but we did try to change their culture. They had some very sexist, and I think I am happy that we did try to change their minds about that. And we did try to get girls going to school and that women didn't have to be accompanied by a man to go anywhere in society. They could have jobs. They could be doctors or teachers or whatever. So those are cultural issues. And we did try to change them, and we did try to address those. And some of those were even addressed. I remember listening to Hillary Clinton during the Bo Bergdahl stuff talk about how women's rights were human rights, and there would be no peace deal if it didn't include women's rights. Those are also, though, I would say, cultural issues. And I'm not saying we shouldn't fight for that, because, you know, you guys both know me. I'm like 100% in on these issues. But I also don't know that we brought people to the table in a way that made them want to champion those issues for themselves. I don't know. You guys were on the ground. So, Frank, go for it.
Of course we were doing that, but that wasn't a. If we go back to before the Soviet invasion, you go back to the '70s and you know late '60s, and you take a look at Afghanistan and its culture then, and it was not this thing that you just described that we were fighting
Absolutely.
Against.
Absolutely, right? Yeah.
So the Taliban took
him back to the Stone Ages. Yeah.
The Taliban was a part of that, and so did all. You know, you had people coming from all over the freaking globe to fight the jihad. Okay,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
Islamist, fundamentalism got a hold and started to eradicate the liberties of the people. All right, so that's a cultural thing, yes, that was injected into Afghanistan. That we were trying to fight back against, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So that is correct in that way, but that isn't to say that we were trying to change Afghan culture.
So, Frank, if you don't think we made some cultural missteps, that we didn't get bogged down in sort of not understanding the culture, where did we get bogged down? What went wrong?
I'm not totally disagreeing with that statement. No. I'm just that one part of the statement, which is to say that we were trying to change their culture, and we were really trying to be careful not to just inject our culture upon them. We were really trying hard to do that, which is a very challenging thing.
Yeah, especially as a military person. I mean, you guys know this. You're not trained to be culturally sensitive.
That's
you know,
true.
You
know, that's wrong. Totally wrong. I mean,
it is.
Very,
it is.
Oh
yeah,
I was trained so
We go through you. There is a lot of training that goes up to, you know, sort of indoctrinating you into certain cultural aspects when you deploy. I mean, it's, you know, they go, you know, so far as, you know, like which hand you should shake with. Make sure you don't show the bottoms of your feet when you're gathered with elders, because that's disrespectful in their country. And I mean, the military does a good job of trying to give you, you know, the basic overarching picture of the culture as a whole. So that way you attempt not to, so that way you're informed enough not to violate cultural taboos.
Can I?
That's good to know. I didn't know that because that certainly wasn't the case in Vietnam.
No, we care. This is what I'm telling you, and this is what I'm trying to say to you guys. This, what we did there is amazing. We improved so much on our approach. However, it also bogged us down by working so hard. And this is what Arlo was saying. We got bogged down in that effort to try to be so careful with culture and trying to help them to, you know, bring out of themselves. So when you have liberty, there's an assortment of things that can happen, right? If you've been oppressed and you have a sudden liberty, if you knew liberties before then, if you had a passion and an understanding that those things are with you, these liberties that you want to express, there can be an explosion of a cultural explosion of like sudden ultra liberty, right? We're like, we're so free. We want this so badly that
we've
got
to do everything. Like, yeah.
Up, right. And with, you know, and the arts should express that. You should see that in the culture, in the arts, right?
Yeah.
You know, and then of course you see that, you know, ripples of that, it affects everything, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I want to get to what can people do to help veterans? Like you guys have talked about a little bit about how you have felt, like what is helpful to people who want to support veterans for their service?
Yeah. Arlo?
I was going to let Frank go first, but okay. I mean, these days, there's so many different organizations that help veterans. I think, I know Frank runs one. I'm involved with Team RWB. But I think right now, one of the things that veterans need and rather want is accountability. There's currently nobody's being held accountable for the failures. And it's not just one person. You can't just blame Biden, or you can't just blame, you know, the Secretary of Defense and say, oh, well, they should have known. No, there was a systematic failure at multiple levels. And in order to prevent catastrophes like this from happening again, those responsible at all the different levels, whether they're still in public office or they're not, need to be held accountable for what happened. I mean, it is obvious. I mean, when the Secretary of Defense says, well, I thought it would go better than this, and they gave it a month, but it collapsed in 11 days, that is somewhere along the line, somebody is feeding misinformation, and it's important to hold somebody accountable for that. Actually, so another friend of mine has started a political action committee to target individuals who are, you know, responsible for this and holding people accountable for
basically
it.
Basically funding an investigation into this, right?
Yes, yeah. So it's the Afghanistan Accountability Pack is what it's – and it just – he just –
and he's a veteran.
Yeah, he's a veteran as well. I believe you've met him. It's Craig Bowden.
And he's great, yeah. And
yeah.
He's tried running for office, and he's been really politically active and speaks out on these issues. But I like that veterans are actually saying, we're not just going to take this. We're going to run for office. We're going to do something about it.
Okay, here's real quick, because we're running out of time. In 30 seconds, I know this is terrible what I'm about to do. What's the future look like for Afghanistan, Arlo?
There's hope there. There has to be.
In what way?
In the way that we can hope by the example that we've set. That, you know, the younger generation decides that they want what they had when they had freedoms. And so now the Taliban's in there. They're older. They're kind of like a 2.0 version. You know, they're behaving themselves for the most part now. But it really is, do the Afghan people want – do they want liberty? Do they want freedom?
And what will they do to get it?
And how far are they willing to go for it? They've been given a taste of it. So, you know, now it's on them.
Frank?
So I got 30 seconds here?
Yeah.
Yeah. But I want to give you extra seconds because I want you to also to say what people can do for veterans.
Yeah. Well, let me just throw it at that then, because so Arlo mentioned mentioned accountability, and I'm going to mention the scary part of that, and that's responsibility. And every single one of us has some. And whether you want to acknowledge it or not, you have some. If your country went to war and you were opposed to it, your country still went to war. And if you don't want to accept your responsibility for your country, that's you're failing there. You're not taking responsibility. You're refusing it. And responsibility doesn't always mean that you're guilty. It also means that you're not guilty and that you have to mourn the losses of things that you didn't want to see happen and that have happened beyond your control or anything you've done. And all of our country needs to do that. Afghanistan needs to be doing that. We need to be doing this on a constant, right? Always being responsible, because when we aren't, and when we don't take responsibility, when we don't mourn, when we don't feel our remorse for things that we didn't mean to have happen that did, when we don't feel our guilt for the things that we do wrong, we don't learn and we don't approach things with empathy. And when we are not doing those things, we're failing. We're not being responsible. We're being irresponsible. And you can't lead. You can't function appropriately in a world where life and death hang constantly, are being traded. Life is being traded for this, for these causes, for these intentions, and these purposes. And that is something that requires, we owe it to everybody that rests in the ground or has been burned and floats in the air. Everybody, we owe it to them to be responsible for what we're doing and what we've done and where we go from here. And so, you know, I think that the Afghan people have a long fight ahead of them, and I support them, and I love them, and I hope the best for them, and I'm praying for them, and I hope for our people and the people around the globe who have put so much heart and effort into this. 20 years, I mean, people are dying over there. Okay, we're going over there and giving it up. Families are getting broken up by the constant division of a warfighter going over there and fighting. Okay, they're coming home and they're crazy and they're angry and they're hurt and they're emotionally unstable, because where is their responsibility? Where is the responsibility of their leaders? And everybody wants to shirk it off, especially our general public, who got so exhausted with war so quickly.
Right.
And they're not even carrying it. They don't even know that our own warfighters come home and don't even know what they've been doing. That's how we've been doing this, and that's so irresponsible that it's causing men and women to kill themselves in such rates that it's unfathomable to me. Yet I watch it, and it blows my mind still every day. And though I've experienced those feelings and I've been there, it still is blowing my mind, because I know that there's an answer here, and it is responsibility.
Listen, I want to say thank you to Arlo Doyle and Frank DeVito for a great discussion. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
Join us again for the next episode of the Loudmouth Project's Voices of Reason. If you have any comments about our show, please contact us via email at voramed@gmail.com or at vorjasonl@gmail.com. You can also find us on Twitter at adonsports and at jasonlee1. Our show's Twitter handle is @VORPodcast. Check out our Facebook page, and you can also find and subscribe to free episodes of our podcast on Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, or any other places where you find interesting content. Be sure to review our show as well. We love to get your feedback, and it helps us grow our audience. Until next time, along with Amy Donaldson, I'm Jason Lee. When you engage in passionate debate, do your best to keep your dialogue civil. Try to be the voice of reason. Voices of Reason is a production of the Loudmouth Project.
A stranger with a gun came upon two teens taking pictures under a rising full moon. But violence is only the beginning of this story.
Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and I've spent my career talking about how lives are undone by violence. The Letter is a podcast about how lives are remade. Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.